Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
More pit stops taking place for the DPIs, including for Elio Castroneves. So I'm not sure he ever did actually get to the lead of the race, Jeremy Shaw. We had Scott Dixon in and out. Elio, I'm sure, is not going to be tamed away from that car just yet. So he'll stay in. But I don't think at any point he got the lead, did he, in the number 10?
No, I don't think he did. Not quite. No, because he's quite a long way behind. The two leaders have pulled about 25 seconds over the number 48 car, which was in the lap previously. And the number 10 car, I don't think, quite got into the lead on this rotation, but it has led some laps in this race. We've had five different leaders so far: number 31, number 10, number 60, number 5, and the number 5, because is that, oh, and a 01, excuse me, that was the other one. The five cars have led the race, and we've already had now about 20 lead changes.
Yeah. Frenetic stuff, and a 7.2 second lead rather belies the closeness of the race to this point. We have had it as high as 14 seconds. Put the five car back to the top of the pile. Who knows for how long for, but yeah, there's a 7 second gap emerging in one or two places now, first to second and second to third, as Castroneves rejoins. That'll probably extend further actually by the time the Brazilian goes through the next timing loop, as the 21 Ferrari is back on the move. Now, this is a challenge for second position in GT Daytona, and around the outside of Klaus Backler is going to go Matteo Cressoni. Scored as in second place as they went through the tri-oval. That was a fantastic bit of driving. You don't often catch Klaus Backler out like that, but obviously the Ferrari got a much better run through Speedway Turn 4 and sweeps across the nose of the Wright Motorsport Porsche to take second place. They are trying to hunt down Andrea Caldarelli. As a moment or two ago, the Konica Minolta Acura that was in pit lane, was there a fumble here when they were refitting Michelin tyres? I don't think they quite had the new tyres in the right places. And there was a delay. Oh, the rear right just would not go on. Now, of course, it was lowered down onto the rear right way too early because it was still being lined up and correctly located. It just isn't going to go on at all. And this was a huge delay for the 10 that we're only picking up now. Finally, those lug nuts are located and the wheel gun can be applied. But got to be at least 10 seconds, Joe Bradley, lost in that pit stop for car 10.
Yeah, Johnny, and 10 seconds might not sound like a lot of time in general terms, but in motorsport, that's a lifetime. Think about that. You are lapping a tenth of a second, two-tenths of a second quicker than that car. Just think how long that's going to take to gain that 10 seconds back and re-establish yourself. It's an absolute lifetime, 10 seconds in a pit stop. That, Johnny, is why you see these teams practicing the drills of tyre changing and refueling these cars. And also, that's why we see the drivers practicing all the time, swapping the drive seats. It's very, very crucial. Even in such a long motor race, we'll see by tomorrow afternoon, this race could very well come down to less than 10 seconds.
Yeah, and yeah, that may even be the race being won or lost right there. The beauty of this race, of course, is the safety cars, and as long as you stay on the lead lap or within one lap of it, there is always the chance of your race to change direction once again. So staying in touch is key, but they were kicking themselves down at Konica Minolta Acura ARX05, as the team is called, with the new for 2021 Acura, because Elio Castroneves had driven a brilliant stint. And then with a slight fumble with the location of the tyres and then getting that rear right on, there was a delay. The mechanic in charge of the airline thought that everything was done, but there was no arm in the air from the rear right mechanic. And that's the reason why it needed to be lifted again for that wheel to go on. But it was just a sort of spiral effect, really. One bad thing happened and it was followed by several others. Back in the race it goes, fourth position for Elio Castroneves, and he's about 18 seconds, nearly 19 seconds adrift of Mike Rockenfeller. It could have been half that were it not for that mistake. And the gap, if anything, this time, Jeremy Shaw, opening up a little bit. Okay, that's just on the last lap, but about 0.8 of a second gained by race leader Sebastian Bourdais. Maybe hit some slightly favourable traffic.
Yeah, could be. But yeah, that delay for the number 10 car, once again, that stayed out a little bit longer than some of the other cars. That is the seventh pit stop for that car during this race. It's done the least amount of pit stops. The two leading cars, number 5 and 01, have both done 8. There's been quite a few cars in this race have had to do earlier on in the race, they had to do an emergency service stop, which it counts for an extra pit stop, even though it doesn't cost them a lot of time. But for the number 10 car there, that really did cost them a lot of time, because they came into the pits, around about, I think, 8 or 9 seconds behind the number 48 car. And are now, I reckon you're right, about 10 seconds it cost them during that stop. It seemed like a lifetime.
Corvette on the inside of the 57 Mercedes, the former class leading GT Daytona AMG. Andy Doncha for Windward Racing at the wheel. So you lead the class one moment, half an hour later you're back down to 13th. That is the nature of the GT3 division, GT Daytona as it is called in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. The number 4 car of Alexander Sims, trying to keep its powder dry. Very busy behind this car. So Sims will be grateful to have worked his way through traffic, and has cars up ahead as well. It's in these moments around Speedway Turn 3 and 4 that you're having to judge those cars in front. Are they cars that you're likely to be catching before Turn 1, or are they prototypes, which you really don't have to worry about because they will just disappear into the distance? But all of this is being computed by these world-class sports car drivers as Sims comes from the high line at the Trioval across the what was normally a solid white line when the Daytona 500 happens, but it's been painted out to offer as much grip as possible. There is a problem here though for the number 19 GRT Grasser Racing Lamborghini of Albert Costa, and it looks like it could be a tyre down for the Huracan GT3. For Spaniard Costa, he is below the double yellow line on the flat apron there, and working his way back to pit road. But seeing this many, many times before, the car has to continue on at as high a pace as possible. I'm looking to see whether the Michelin tyres are fully inflated. It looks fine on the right-hand side, but there may be an issue on the left, possibly with suspension or a Michelin tyre which is on its way down. Tough to tell, but it's just about going to make its pit stall. There's another car rejoining, which is the 25 BMW, which very nearly caught the back of the Lamborghini Huracan. When you're making your stop and then rejoining, you have to be so much aware of what is going on around you, because cars heading into the pits aren't necessarily going to be up to speed. This could well be fuel, Jeremy Shaw. The car's not even going to make it stall. And here come GRT Grasser as a team. Four guys to try and get the car into the right place. I think it is on the dregs of that fuel tank. So they're all now pushing the GRT Grasser car to its rightful position. I've got a sheet of paper here that tells me how far down pit road GRT Grasser Racing Team are positioned, and I make it boxes 32 and 33. It's box 32 for car 19, but it must have stopped closer to stall 22, so 10 boxes further down. And finally GRT Grasser can get the airline plugged in. It goes up on its internal jacks and the fuel can now go in. Joe Bradley's got a thought on what's going on for GRT.
You know what? That was an almost perfect fuel stint, wasn't it? To get that...
It looks like it, yeah.
to get that close to the pit box. Maybe the next time they calculate a refueling stop, they'll maybe not just shit. They'll not shave that razor blade as finely as that. That almost worked. They saw it in a cartoon, thought it might work. Well, lads, you were close, but not quite close enough. And that's going to cost them time, isn't it?
It is, but credit to the team because they were alert. I'm sure Albert Costa had been on the radio saying, I'm not going to make this, guys. I might need a bit of manpower to help me the final few feet. And so it proved. Now, question is, how many laps had Albert managed on that stint? And we need to compare and contrast with the previous one. I make that a 30-lap stint for the Spaniard. And they did, Tim Zimmerman did a 30-lap stint before as well. And they've actually managed a 32-lap stint prior to that. The 34-lap one I'm going to discount for Misha Goitberg because that will have involved at least one caution. But we have been green, certainly, all the way through Aidan Reid's stint, which was... that's the wrong car. Skipped a line now. But we've been green for all of the previous stint for Tim Zimmerman. There we go. And the 30 laps that he was able to do. So that's a strange one because Albert Costa... maybe he ticked onto 31 laps, you know. Maybe that is the difference. You can do 30, you can't do 31. And that will be jotted down in the notebook down at GRT Grasser Racing. No doubt about it. I suppose these are the things you need to find out during free practice rather than in the race. But at least he didn't get stranded all the way out on the back straight and cause a caution. Have to come into pit road on the end of a tow rope. It wasn't as disastrous as that, and that's one of the mistakes that you will hopefully only make once in the race. Sharp end of the field, DPI led by Sebastian Bourdais, still this 7-second lead back to Scott Dixon. Then it's nearly 21 seconds the difference to Mike Rockenfeller, so although he's in a Cadillac as well, it looks like the Mustang sampling and the Chip Ganassi Racing caddies seem to have the pace over the third place car just at the moment. Fastest laps set earlier on in the race would echo that thought. The fastest lap of the race was set by the number 01 car, a 134.657. That was done early on. And a 135.0 offered by the number 5 car as well. The fastest that the 48 car has managed is a 135.4, but we also need to concentrate on things like average lap times as well through stints that are generally 22 laps in the Daytona prototype category. Elia Castroneves is running fourth. Pipo Durrani for Whelan Engineering still just about in the right position. Bear in mind, a lap is just over a minute and a half here, and Pipo trails the race leader by a minute and 19, so another 15 seconds or so lost for the Brazilian, and he's running close to falling off the lead lap. It's in control at the moment, but just needs to catch the odd bit of traffic here and there, and that could get dangerous. Juan Pablo Montoya is right in the zone for falling off the lead lap. Might already be there. He's a minute and 36 off race leader Sebastian Bourdais, so we'll be looking in the mirrors for an approaching Bourdais as the race leader. Matteo Cressoni in the 21 car has worked his way, by the way, to the sharp end of GT Daytona. He pulled off a spectacular move around the outside of Klaus Backler to take second place, as it was then, and now has managed to make his way to the very front of GT Daytona. Backless followed him into second, and Charlie Eastwood for TF Sport is running in third place in the 97 car with Roman De Angelis for the Heart of Racing team in the Aston Martin. So how many different manufacturers can I offer you in the top five? Four, with a Ferrari, a Porsche, two Aston Martins, third and fourth, and the Mercedes in fifth position. So we're nearing the end of this little segment of our broadcast with RS2 IMSA Radio. But if you're just joining us, perhaps thinking, right, settling in for a full night of action, and I know there are many, many of you brave enough to stay up for the full duration, then there is a great team on its way to keep you company with the return of John Hindhoff, who's been a busy man this weekend, but he did allow me to call free practice four, and got 3-odd hours here as well. So, John, you will have been chilling out in the green room, but ready to get cracking again now.
How do you know what colour the room was, Johnny?
Green rings aren't ever green, have you noticed that?
Never, ever. Never, ever. Oh, you've had plenty to talk about there, haven't you? That's been a really interesting session.
Yeah, there's been one or two clashes that we don't like to see, and I did like the fact that Race Control actually allowed some of them to just lie, and they were almost self-policing in the case of Olivier Pla. You're going to get that in the early stages of Daytona. I get the feeling that the race just needs a period of time to settle down, but we're there now, and I mean, you'll have the stats for how long this green flag has gone on for, but this is what I craved really after that succession of yellows.
You absolutely read my mind, because you've had 2 hours and 41 minutes under green flag. Johnny Palmer, Joe Bradley, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Reporter, and Jeremy Shaw was joining Johnny in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Now, it's a quick personnel change here on IMSA Radio, RS2. On the www.imsaradio.com website, sound and vision there, and of course at the circuits on a 7.9 FM Sirius XM, Sirius 217, that's 216, excuse me, XM 202. So welcome to our broadcast and the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre for the first time for 2021 and the 59th running of the Daytona 24 Hours, the Rolex Daytona 24 Hours, and say hello to Nick Damon.
Hello, John.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Not all plain sailing for people, of course. Acura's having problems with their wheels going on and off. And these are, I mean, both the teams who have got the Acuras, very, very experienced, but they just seem not to be able to get those wheels located.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, the Gremlins that turn up in first races of the season. I don't know, they've done a 100-minute race, but it's nothing. They don't get the same temperature build-up or the same sort of panic build-up as you do when you're already nearly 6 hours into a 24-hour race. And, yeah, there may be little tiny amendments to improve things. But it's often seen sometimes when you get the heat of battle, you don't actually know those improvements. Whilst, yes, perhaps reducing a half a turn of nut to make it slightly quicker or a wider thread. And we've seen this happen before in F1. Sometimes those nuts and the mounting, whilst it seems great at room temperature, suddenly in the heat of battle, just a little bit out of tolerance, and you've got a huge problem with the sticking wheel, sticking nut.
Shea Adam is back with us as well, looking
hello.
After hello, looking after traditional. That's just a hotkey that I have here. I can make it happen anytime. Look, hang on. Here we go again. Here we go now.
Hello.
There you go. Shea Adam back with us as our VP Racing Fuel Pit Paddock Reporter. Quite a lot of people on Twitter shared just what, about an hour or so ago, maybe a little bit more now, IMSA Radio, excuse me, using the hashtag R24 Radio, asking about the aftermath of that nasty looking incident for Turner when fuel got flung all over the place. Bill Oberlin was down there at the time and was affected by that. What can you tell us about those that were close to that fuel spillage?
Everybody is fine. Bill said that he was covered in gas. It burned him really well, but he went straight back to the motorhome, took a shower, put some fresh clothes on. He's ready to go again. So everybody, thankfully, okay from that one. And scary moment for people watching at home, for sure, to see a driver that they know and love as much as Bill in a situation like that. It's not something you ever want to be a part of.
He did have his racing helmet on, but the visor wasn't all the way down. And when people sometimes talk about penalties being handed out or warnings being handed out for, you know, incorrectly attired people at a fuel stop, all right, Bill was a bit further away and not involved directly in the fuel shop. But that just goes to show, doesn't it, how seriously you have to take safety all the time in a pit lane.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the reason, to be quite honest, that I don't stand in front of a car when it's leaving the pit box, because if it's going to drag any equipment with it, it's going to go in that direction. So you always want to be standing behind the car.
So it's some nasty ones down through the years. Little whoopsie for Corvette number 4, which has just gone a little bit too long at the International Horseshoe, first of the infield hairpins. And that is Alexander Sims, who's leading the GT Le Mans category. I would suggest then probably not anymore. I think that was his teammate that just sneaked through there. They've got about 100 seconds on the chasing pack, which is led by Conor De Filippi for BMW Team RLL in the 25 car. Let's do a couple of updates. First of all, some penalties coming in, or a penalty at least, and an update on Lexus as well, Shea.
In terms of the penalty, it was just called for car number 9. That's the Pfaff Motorsports Porsche in the beautiful plaid representing Team Canada. Matt Campbell was a little bit late on his pit commit to come down the pit lane, and he didn't exactly get lined up where he should have been. Race control noticed. They called a penalty. That is a drive-through. And a lot of people might have noticed that the number 12 Lexus, which is a full-season entrant, by the way, for Frankie Montecalvo and Zach Veach, went behind the wall a little bit ago. I've just received information. They sustained damage to the radiator due to debris on the track. So that car back in the garage needing quite a bit of repair. It's already fallen down to 18th in class, and in another 6 laps it will lose that last place position to the still recovering number 111 of Stein Schoedhorst behind the wheel right now, Grasser Racing Lamborghini. That car has been suffering with electrical gremlins all race meeting, not just the race today.
Shit, Adam, with that VP Racing Fuel pit and paddock report, still just on 18 and a half hours to go. We've been, well, officially Nick Damon in the dark. Well, you and I have been in the dark for a very long time, but officially it was sunset. It's 1 minute past 6. It's now, what, nearly 9:10 here at Daytona. We're seeing a little bit of a pattern emerge now, and this is the meat of the race right now. 13 hours and 11 minutes from sunset on Saturday tonight to sunrise on Sunday morning, and this is where the race, you've got to tick off the laps at this point, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing to remember really about Daytona, and it is unique in so many ways, but this way particularly, because it's not actually dark, it's completely different. It's a proper completely floodlit circuit in the bowl of the NASCAR circuit, and the difference in lighting between this and going down the back of the Mulsanne straight at Le Mans is, well, night and day.
Very good. I see what you did there.
You I mean, and obviously I'm getting tremendous deja vu, because I was here all last weekend virtually, so I've turned hundreds of laps around this track with the team in the massively entered iRacing event last week. But you do, because you obviously, that models the light, and it's honestly, in the dark it is 90% as it would be in the daytime, unlike other tracks, which is, you know, really is a case where it's 40 or 50% of visibility and you're thinking and looking for different references. You can use all the same references because it is just floodlit, you know, and the difference in speed is nothing. You have the same amount of confidence, especially when you go around the front, right over the front stretch, which it's lit up like a Wembley Stadium on a cup final evening.
And again, very different from what we had a couple of weeks ago, where we had 13 hours and 16 minutes of darkness at the Dubai International Circuit for their 24-hour race. It's one of the great joys. Ian Ferris has, I hope he's still listening before he disappears. He's hoping for the 79 Porsche leading in class, and same with the 97 Aston when he comes back. He's heading off to bed, presumably in the UK or Europe at the moment. And Matt is finally on his lunch break, 2 a.m. in the UK. So that's, what, 10 minutes ago. So still listening in, I hope, Matt, watching and listening. Great stuff from Daytona. That's at IMSA Radio, hashtag R24 Radio. One of the great joys, Nick, is the fact that is the fact that there are many 24-hour races around the world, and for goodness sake, we cover a great amount. If you, when I first started going to Le Mans in 89, would you believe, that was 1989, Shea, before you say anything else, thank you.
Yes, I know.
That was the big 24-hour race. Daytona had a 24-hour race, and you know that was about it. Nowadays, there are plenty of international 24-hour races. Quite a lot of them are televised. We do quite a lot of them, but they all have their own unique character. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think this is part of the move away from motorsport meaning just one thing, which is Formula One, and the ability for the televising and the following and the fandom of endurance sports car racing has enabled these marquee events to be set up. And we start with Dubai, which is 24, then we would normally have Bathurst, with this Daytona, then we have Bathurst with 12, and then we have the other big events, of course, which is Nürburgring 24, which is crazy, and the Spa 24, which is, again, completely unique in its single-class environment. So you have these stanchions in the season, in a normal season, when the dates are running, where you have these big endurance events. And and you're absolutely right, John, they have completely different characters. I would say that my feeling is that Daytona, in many ways, is the most accessible, I think. I think it's the one that's the biggest crossover. The ability, if you're lucky enough to be here in next year, yeah, you can get up on the banking, you can see what, three-quarters of the circuit, seven-eighths of the circuit, it's like brand patch. You know, you don't have the car disappearing off into the boondocks for 4 minutes, then coming back again. All the activity going on in the infield, it's a real spectator event, and, you know, kind of combines that American razzmatazz with endurance racing.
No, it's a perfect description. Well done, Nick Damon, who's in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. So, just a wee while ago, Alexander Sims went off at the International Horseshoe. He's since pitted in the number 4 Corvette, I think. He's been out there. Yeah, that was a 32 lap stint here, but he stayed in the car.
Yes, he did, and he did owe us a trip down the pit lane. He had been out on track for more than 50 minutes at the time of his off, so perhaps it was just the tires giving up at the end of maybe a very long stint. But yes, his pit lane visit was due, and Nick Katzberg just made a trip down pit lane too, so the two Corvettes are running on a slightly different strategy than the two BMWs, who are running on the same strategy than the Ferrari. It's interesting that they're all pitting at different times.
Something for you to get your teeth into straight away, Shea, now that you're back on duty as our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Reporter. Sebastian Bourdais has just come in and left the pits, actually. He stayed aboard the number 5 Mustang sampling Cadillac, but only did it's a bit short. It's about 4 laps short, I reckon, of what we've seen him do. And it's that Rockefeller just come in as well. That's interesting. Rockefeller's come in a few laps early in the Ally Cadillac. So Bourdais in the Mustang sampling car came in after just 18 laps on the racetrack, where he's been doing, his last stint was a 21 lap stint, 22 for the car before that, and they were full green flag stints, weren't they? Yes, they were. And as I say, Bourdais after 18, Rottenfeller, I think that was just a 17 lap stint for Rockefeller, so something odd going on with those guys. Just skim back for him. Well, Bourdais stayed in the car, so that he's going for what will amount to a triple. What I don't know, and Rocky stayed in as well. What I don't know, Shea, and you weren't on then, I don't know whether Seabass took tyres at his last stop, and I wonder if he was just feeling the pinch a bit on the tyres as he got towards the end of the stint. As I say, maybe four laps shy of what we might have expected to see. Something perhaps for you to chase up, if you don't mind.
The tyres would be the least of their worries once you get to the night time with the temperatures dropping.
Hasn't dropped that much, Nick. 17 Celsius, Michelin tell us on on the track. And when I was, you know, 3 hours ago, it was 19. Now, all right, it's 2 degrees is 2 degrees, but as any tyre tech will tell you, but the temperature, the air temperature, holding up really nicely. That's still at 17 Celsius at the moment. So, you know, it is. I mean, it, don't forget, we're not at 9:30 yet, and we've got the long night still to come. Shea will have been looking at the forecast. You are normally our weather fiend, Shea. What is the overnight forecast and into tomorrow morning for the environs of the racetrack?
Well, and when you say I'm your weather vane, does that mean you stick me on the roof and I spin in the wind to tell you which direction
pretty
it's going?
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No rain. No rain expected whatsoever. Our low tonight, it's supposed to get down into the 50s. I believe it is 61 right now is the last Michelin update I had on the weather, going down to a low of potentially 54, 55 tonight. So not much variation in the temperature. Clear skies overnight, a little bit of cloud in the morning, especially toward the end of the race, have to say, and a high of 75 tomorrow. So basically ideal conditions to be in the pit lane.
Another car that I need to check up on, which was doing very nicely, thank you very much indeed. No, it's all right. Why has Nico Lapierre dropped down? Has he just stopped as well, Shea?
No. That car spent quite a bit of time, 5 laps at a minimum, behind the wall. They were working on something, and I have sent a text to find out what was going on. Haven't heard back yet, but I'll let you know when I do.
Sean was asking about that car a couple or 3 minutes ago. Hashtag R24 Radio, Rolex 24 Radio. That's where the R comes from. Go ahead,
Nick. There seems to be a bit of malaise amongst the P2 cars. I mean, we've lost three already, or there's three struggling badly in the 29, 20, and the 81, who may well be out. Now we've got a problem with
81 is a definite retirement. I saw that early on.
Is this the first outing? And I think it is. This is the first competitive outing for the newly power reduced P2s, isn't it? With the 6.6% reduction in horsepower, about 40 horsepower, to make it a little bit slower down in down the straights at Le Mans. So they have got a slightly different version. I mean, I know it'd been gearbox problems and everything else, but they have got it is a slightly different version than was here last year as they adopt the new regulations.
Well, you say that, but of course, LMP2 was always hamstrung, or has more recently been hamstrung in IMSA terms, Nick, because when they took them out of the class with the DPIs, remember the year when Core Autosport were battling for the championship, and then the next year they took them out, and IMSA were the first people to actually apply their own BOP to take them out of the top class effectively. So that's a fair point, and if I'm honest, I don't know the full technical answer to that, but somebody will at IMSA Radio. If you don't mind, hashtag R24.
Again, just talking about the virtual world, they made that change halfway through the practice for Daytona, and interestingly, it only took about a second off the lap time. You think it would take a lot more, but and about 5 miles an hour down the main straight.
You said that made them easier to drive in some respects.
Yeah, definitely did. The thing to remember is, and it's interesting, you may lose 40 horsepower, but if you think Daytona's a really, really interesting track, you look at it, you think this is so simple, and then you actually realise, no, it's really difficult. But think about how many times a car has accelerated from very low speed, coming out of one, coming out of the horseshoe, coming out of five, coming out of six, which is called the Western. Anyway, so you've got all those acceleration, but you're coming from a very, very low speed. At that point, you're traction limited. Doesn't mean you've got a million horsepower, because you're limited by what the rear tyres can put through. In some ways, having a slightly softer power delivery makes it a bit easier. Yes, you're losing a maximum speed, absolutely. And also a bit of acceleration from higher speed, so that acceleration, for example, out of the bus stop. But, you know, have more effect at other tracks. I think it may have more effect percentage-wise at Le Mans, for example, and some of the medium-fast circuits. But this track is really, really interesting design. Its simplicity is non-existent. It is one of the most difficult circuits to get right, because there's a challenge. There's a challenge every corner, apart from turn 3 and turn 4, where the only challenge is, that's NASCAR 3 and NASCAR 4, the only challenge is not running into the back of somebody who's going slower than you.
Chip?
We just had a pit caller down the lane. That was the Mazda, Jonathan Bomarito, getting out of that car, and Oliver Jarvis getting back in. So that's all three of the Mazda drivers who have now rotated through the car, not necessarily rotating in the car, thankfully. But it was fuel and tires for Mr. Jarvis as he heads back out onto the course and also into the pit lane. Another English driver that we love a lot, Oliver Gavin, in his yellow car, but this time it's GTD, and this time it is a Lexus, so the number 14 making a trip for fuel and tires as well. And the 01 is in the pit lane. This is Scott Dixon from the lead of the race, will be staying aboard, but getting four fresh Michelin tires as well as fuel. And I've just had an update back from the 52 machine. That's the PR1 Matheson LMP2 machine that people were asking about. They were leading the class. They dropped five laps. They had to change the intake. So that's why they dropped back so far. But apparently they are pushing like crazy for the remainder of this race. Remember, this is one of two cars that Ben Keating is driving in the race today. So even if this one isn't his winning speed, which used to stay, it's not. There's a long time to go and six spots that they can get back. He still has to drive in the Aston Martin, of which he's done zero driving time so far.
Scott Dixon following up a 22-lap stint last time around with a 21-lap stint that time around. So off... Did Dixie get out of that car? He didn't, did he?
Nope. Right. There was no crowbar used. Scott still behind the wheel.
A very fine driver in anything he gets behind the wheel. In anything of which he gets behind the wheel. And he goes out for his triple then. And a triple is going to be something in the region of 105 minutes, so just over an hour and a half. So not the Ironman stint that our colleague Paul Truswell would be looking for. All the best, Paul. I'm sure you're following along back in walking. And what was I looking at before I distracted myself there? Oh, yeah. So still a bit of an odd one, because on that last pit stop cycle, the Mustang Sampling Cadillac, the Cunningham and Alta Acura and the Ally Cadillac, so that was 5, 10 and 48, all did 18 lap stints rather than the 22 or 21, 22 lap stints that they'd be doing. All right, I know. We're talking three, four laps. We're talking, you know, 7, 8 minutes. But it just seems a bit odd that they did that. Shit, what do you know about those pit stops? I'm not suggesting there are any problems, but have you been able to find anything out from the team as to why they pitted four laps earlier than they have been?
Many thanks to Kyle Chura, who said that from teams, and he did check in with both teams, they were regular stops. So they were perhaps a little bit early, but there was nothing untoward and nothing to bring them in early.
Okay. Not sure of that. Tom Firth is asking, what happened? I meant to mention this earlier on, actually, because while I was away from the mic in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, I noticed a couple of people talking about brake changes and how and who might do brake changes. Is it only going to be GT Le Mans? No, is the short answer. And sure, there's a specific regulation for brake changes for LMP3, which includes, during the race, an 8-minute stop, which is mandated for them to be able to take their time and do a safe brake change. Is there somewhere specific in the race that has to happen, as far as we know?
Well, there isn't a time where they say it needs to happen now. Like, everybody needs to stop on the track now and come into the pits now and make this happen. No. It does need to happen before, I believe it is 20 hours of the race have been completed. It might be 22. I'll have to double check myself off the top of my head. But we've just had a very rare occurrence. Oliver Gavin has been given a penalty He, much like Matt Campbell, was a late committer to the pit lane entry and was given a drive-through penalty, which he is serving right now.
Right. Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter.
A busy time at the penalty box, aren't they? There's a lot of people who are with a lot of minor infringements. I've been watching most of the race, you know, whilst it's been going on, and the number of people are getting called for silly things like, you know, rotating their wheels off the ground and a bit of speeding and everything else. I think this is really where, you know, I know you perhaps it's a bit more relaxed is the wrong word, but you have a chance to make up these penalties because, you know, the will at some point unfortunately be a full course yellow. But it doesn't even, it just feels a little bit of casualness has crept in, perhaps rustiness, ring rustiness almost. But it's just surprising seeing how late the last season ended, John.
Well, and you know, in our Porsche Keys to Race, which seems like 5 minutes ago when we were doing that in the Michelin Pilot Challenge, in the Michelin Countdown to Green, when it, in fact, you know, it's nearly 6 hours ago, our first point was rules rule. And Shea's been, in fairness, on a bit of a soapbox all the Raw week and all this week as well. And it's, you know, it does show. And a drive-through here is actually, all right, you're not going to lose a lap, Nick, but it's slowing down, getting into the pits, speeding up through that nadgy pit exit that runs alongside turn one. Oh, it's been, that's going to lose you half a lap, maybe a little bit more. Imagine trying to make up half a lap on the track. You know, that's the better part of a minute for most of the classes.
Well, that's it. With these very, very tightly grouped various classes, where, you know, when they're actually out there and free running, though, the difference between a great lap and a bad lap in clear air is 0.2 or 0.3 of a second. You know, it's just ridiculous to give it away. But and you can think about it, if we go back to what Jeremy hates most of all, but a code 60 concept, that time, you never get that time back. So perhaps you are a little bit more careful. Yeah. I think, you know, I'm not saying anyone deliberately does it, but perhaps there's a little bit less focus on some of those things. We think, oh, it's fine, you know, we're 6 hours in, we've got 18 hours, we'll get that back at some point. Yeah, move on. Whereas there's not that kind of laser focus when you come in the pit, they make sure I do A to B to see. Somebody isn't counting him in, somebody isn't counting him out, somebody's the same, you know, limited, somebody isn't saying don't rev the car. You know, it's these are very good professional teams, but, you know, even they will have different priorities during the frenetic activity of the pit stop.
That's Nick Dearman. He's alongside me, John Hindorf, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. And whilst we've got plenty of racing this weekend, by Monday afternoon, you will be missing your fix of racing, won't you? So at 1 o'clock Eastern, at 6 o'clock in the UK, it is our post Daytona edition of the Hagerty Inside Track in sound and vision. Responsible adult lining up some of the headline makers for that. An hour's worth of chat on the Hagerty Live portion of Hagerty.com. You can ask the questions as well of the panel. That's the Hagerty Inside Track, 1 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock in the evening UK. Hopefully you'll join us for that. Although, what kind of state I'm going to be in, I'm not really built to be in front of a camera anyway. Never have been. As my much-loved father used to always tell me, face for radio, son. And he was right, wasn't he, on that, in so many different ways. But after the 24 hours... I'm not sure.
You'll be even more radio-like, won't you?
Yes.
You'll be face the radio of the 1950s, probably. You know,
HD radio, mate. By that time.
I'm just slightly not tuned very well. Radio, you know, just slightly off.
That is very true. Very true. Down the inside at turn one for our race leader Sebastian Porte, who carves his way through a bit of traffic. His lead now some 15 seconds on Scott Dixon in second, who's got half a minute on Elio Castroneves in third. So Cadillac Acura. Elio back with Acura, although of course a new team this year, Wayne Taylor moving over to the Acura DPI. Acura. Acura committing their future in prototype racing to IMSA into the new rule set in 2023, which in motor racing terms, Nick, it is really just round the corner. If you're going to be having your new DPI 2.0 with the mild hybrid, what the ACO are calling LMDH, if you're going to have that at this race in 2023, well, you have got to commit about now. And other manufacturers who are thinking about doing this, we don't know what GM are doing yet, although Laura Wantrup Clauser, who was on Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday, said everything was still on the table. But you're going to have to commit pretty soon to get that programme up and running.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've already had very positive news from both Audi and Porsche. We know that there are other manufacturers who are going down the currently Le Mans only route, though Wickenhaus and the LMH seem to think they're going to get an entry into this event as well come 2023. But yeah, there is a change coming in the chassis of the P2 cars, which of course the LMDH will be based upon. You need to be able to start assessing those. You need to start assessing exactly what you can change, what you can't. I think item you did a few weeks ago with a prototype panel on Radio Le Mans. I mean, the teams have been focused for a long way, but they themselves are spending a couple of months evaluating the unknowns pretty much before they start sticking a bit of metal into a milling machine or vacuum forming some carbon fiber, just to make sure they start with the basic concept correct, because it's that's the key thing. You can make a misstep on day one and then you'll scupper for several years. So they're all they're all thinking what to do, but suddenly, they're looking at huge competition. It's pretty obvious, and I'm going to say because I can, that there's going to be a GM brand in LMH. It just depends which GM brand it is, whether it's Cadillac or Corvette. And therefore, you're going to have at least four major manufacturers. We haven't had Mazda commit yet. They probably will, in the American side. And then when you get to Le Mans, there'll be eight manufacturers at least, because of the people who've decided to pick up LMH. And suddenly, we go from a situation which is of abject despair about what the hell's happening next in the top level of endurance sports cars in June, to having an abundance of riches, which is the main reason why all these people are driving P2s, as we said many times before.
And you've made a very good point there, which I just need to pick up on, because people might have sort of just let it wash over them. It's going to be the new DPI, IMSA's new concept, which I think rather sensibly the ACO have took on, so which we're calling LMDH. That is based on the new LMP2 cars, which we've not seen yet. So if you're a manufacturer, even if you're a current DPI manufacturer and you're linked with one of the four, obviously you're most likely to go with the one that you're already linked with, but not necessarily, Nick. And you might want to see that new version of LMP2 before you make a decision.
Yeah, if we look at the way the last launch went, it very quickly became obvious that in its native form, the Riley had problems. Then it was found that the Orica was quicker in a number of situations than both the Ligier and Dallara. And despite getting an extra bodywork amendment to those two chassis, they've never really caught up with the Orica 07. And that was pretty evident almost, I would say, from the second or third race, once everyone was running them properly. And suddenly, we saw everyone gravitate. You got to the point where the Ligier distributor for the UK had to drop the car, United Autosports, to run the Orica to be competitive. So you don't want to start scuppering your chances straight off. But on the flip side, the car that's leading this race is based on the Dallara. So you think, well, if the basic core elements are right and it's just the aero, which was so nailed down by the AEC as a problem, then really, do what you say, go with the part that we know, bet the devil we know, assume they'll be able to get it right. Or will someone come with something so trick that you don't have that as the heart of your car, you're starting with doesn't have to be much, a 0.2, a 0.5 second deficit.
It's Nick Dearman in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Let's head to an interview now, and delighted to say that joining us live from the very centre of the action is the man at the head of IMSA. That's John Doonan. President Doonan, thank you for joining us here on IMSA Radio. How are you, John, and Happy New Year?
So good to hear your voice. Happy New Year to you all. So wish you were here. Every time I think hearing you in the PA, I could just go find you somewhere in the broadcast booth here on site and give everybody a big bear hug. We miss you guys being on site.
We are. We're there in more than spirit, John. We're there in volume as well. I know you've been on the line listening there, and obviously we're talking about LMDH DPI 2.0, an IMSA concept that has rightly and sensibly been taken on across the sports car world as one of the options for the top category of prototype racing. This week, a big, big announcement from IMSA that as of this race next year, that GT3 will become the top class of GT racing. No GT Le Mans, but GT3 Pro. Is that IMSA once again taking the lead and saying, look, we think this is the way to go. By all means, follow. Or are you just at the moment not looking any further than the North American market and IMSA's own constituents?
Well, always in our strategy, we're hoping that with our partnerships with the 18 auto manufacturers that run in IMSA, we can take direction certainly from them and what their interests are to grow their brands and use IMSA as a marketing tool for their vehicle platforms. And it seems like the right time. Discussions have been going on for probably 18 months or so, a little bit before I arrived here. And given the conversations, given the transition that GTLM and GTE globally are going through in the next few years, based on feedback from our OEM partners, we felt like it was the right time. And we're in constant communication with our partners at the ACO. In fact, as you know, Pierre Fion was here today, and they've been working in unison with us. So we'll see what happens for global convergence on GT down the road. But we're excited to be able to kick it off here at Daytona in 2022.
Well, I never thought I'd be standing part of that press conference that we had at Daytona about prototype convergence. I really had to nip myself when we were doing that one. If we can get that thorny issue of GT convergence sorted as well, that would be extraordinary. It is clear to me, though, John, and you've more than hinted at it there, that the manufacturers understand why this needs to be done. And talking to Doug Feehan last year, now back end of last year, albeit maybe a bit before that, actually middle of the year after they won their 100th IMSA race here on the 4th of July, Laura Wamptrop Klauser, his successor, also saying they absolutely have to look at it. So there's no worry for you that manufacturers like GM, so important to IMSA, who don't have a GT3 product at the moment, there's no worry that you're going to lose them and their factory involvement?
No, similar to, in your reference to LMDH, we had a great announcement here last year, and I think similarly, the market speaks, the feedback from the manufacturers currently competing in GT, whether it's GTLM here or GTD, all in favor of that same type of convergence eventually. We're going to kick it off here. We're excited about GTD Pro. It provides some of the manufacturers the opportunity to continue to have a factory-supported team, if you will. But we also know that most of those manufacturers have a business model around customer racing. So it's a little bit of the best of both worlds when you break it all down. And there's a lot of smiles and a lot of fist pumps and fist bumps in the paddock this weekend with people excited about the opportunities that GTD Pro and GTD will bring next year.
Do you know, I've said this down through the years, John, and you and I have talked about this before you were in the position that you hold right now. One of the things I really like about IMSA is on a decision like this about GTD Pro, this effectively reverses a policy that IMSA put in about factory all-pro teams in GTD a couple of years ago. And it's not a U-turn. This is reacting to events. This is knowing what's going on in the world of sports car racing.
You're exactly right, John. And we have a little bullet point in our mission statement is let's do what's right for the sport. And certainly that involves our partners. But our goal is definitely with this to do what's right for the sport. The manufacturers competing in GT3 spec cars or with GT3 spec cars globally, they're readily available by many of these brands. I think we have 9 manufacturers in GTD with us on a pretty regular basis here in IMSA. So the volume and the inventory of cars is available. Some of them, the manufacturers want to showcase those cars in a pro format. But again, customer racing is big for most of them. And our hope is that we even have a driver lineup requirement across the categories that you could see everybody fighting it out at the last few stints of some of these races in GT3 cars, that specification globally. So we're really excited about it and can't wait to see what 2022 holds in that regard.
It seems to be all good news at the moment, John. I mean, it's a terribly difficult situation for any business in motorsport, whether it's IMSA as a series or the teams in the paddock is a business. But we had Toyota in the Michelin Pilot Challenge for the first time yesterday, and the new Supra GT4 GR led some laps. You've had the electric TCR car with Augusto Farfus whizzing around doing demonstration laps, and I know Marcello Lotti, the man behind TCR, is at has been at Daytona having some meetings as well. I mean, you guys relentlessly pushing forward at the moment. It's a really good time.
It is, John, and before the event, both with our staff as well as all the community here, we talked about how much of a privilege it is to be able to be racing right now. And we're taking that very seriously, and there's a lot of responsibility around it. But you're right. We have kept our heads down. And outside of having to wear masks in the paddock and try to remain socially distanced and all the things that we need to do to operate these events safely, we have been pushing forward. And we're in business, as Mr. France said this morning at our chairman's breakfast with everybody separated in a big room. We're in business. When the green flag dropped on the roar before the 24 and so many events this weekend, it tells you that we're pushing forward. We're thrilled with having 18 manufacturers. You mentioned Toyota joining us and Michelin Pilot. Acura made an outstanding announcement on Tuesday relative to their commitment to LMDH. And the driver lineup here and this event going on right now, there is a lot to be thankful for. And like you said, the ETCR Hyundai Veloster N was really special to see that launch out of pit lane yesterday. took me back to my slot car days.
Oh, yes. We all love electric racing. Nick Damon is on the line. Obviously, a big exponent of electric racing and proponent of electric racing for a long time with RC racing as well. John, I know you don't have an awful lot of time this weekend, so thank you for taking some of it with us. And I know you'd like to watch a bit more of the racing, so I'll let you sneak away before, I'm sure, another appointment. But thanks for joining us here on IMSA Radio.
So glad to be with you. Thank you and the entire staff for what you all do. We're so pleased to have you with us. Always a key part of the weekends when the sessions open and you all come on air. And it means so much to us, and I know it means a lot to your listeners. So thanks to everybody, and can't wait to see you all at an event real soon.
Huge audience, John, I can tell you, just from the Twitter around the world at the moment, watching and listening in. John Doonan, the president of IMSA, thanks for being with us again, and thanks to Nate Siebens for setting that up as part of our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Report. Cheers, John. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we've gone through another racing hour there and went a little bit over, but you'll understand why we went with John on the line. We stayed with it. The Motel 6 prototype is facing the wrong direction in the bus stop at the moment, but has refired and goes through the cutout. So slightly late for our update. Don't think there's any damage on that car. Shit, Adam, the update 5 minutes ago would have been exactly at 6 hours if we hadn't been talking to Mr. Doonan, and got chopped by, just ran deep, almost ran into the back of the GT car that was going around that LMP3 car at the moment. That may have been a tiny bit of contact there from the 7th place LMP3 machine, and that car sitting well down, and that is the it's the 38. Yeah, it's the 38. My apologies, why I put that into LMP2.
I will say, and I'm a great fan of multi-class IMSA racing, but I really wish, as someone who's kind of coming to it once a year, effectively working on the event, they'd adopt the same thing as Gravantic do. Whereas each of the classes has their own set of numbers.
Oh, I agree. I should have said that to John. Should have said that to John Doonan. Absolutely.
Right. Number seven. What on earth group is number seven in?
Well, it's 38. It was in seventh position.
Yeah, I know.
That was the thing. And I think it's borrowed some parts from one of its IPC LMP3 stable mates there, because it didn't look like that at the start. Shea, give us an update on these pit stops, and then we'll do a quick rundown and some Michelin Endurance Cup points from about 5 minutes ago.
Well, we haven't had the Michelin Endurance Cup points. They've been awarded, but the standings, I suppose you would say, have not yet been posted online, so I will stay afoot of that and give those to you when we get the opportunity. But as has become the routine, the BMWs are into the pit lane first. It's Conor DiFilippi staying aboard the 25. That is the red one. And Marco Wittmann, let me see, he has done a double. Well, Conor's also done a double, so Marco could be staying on for one more. As far as other pit stops that we've had during this segment, it's actually been fairly quiet in the pit lane. Actually, everybody listening in to Mr. Doonan and not wanting to do pit stops while he's been talking, so that's been nice. And when we get those points, I will let you know.